Welcome to another episode of MSDN Dev Radio, Azure Edition. My name is Peter Ladotti, and I'm joined here by my partner, Brian Hitney, in North Carolina. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Peter. Thank you. How's things going up in New Jersey today?
Very foggy. Almost seems very Redmond-like, like Seattle. It's cloudy, which is unusual, because this is the time of year when the weather's really awesome here. It's not hot. It's not cold. It's always sunny, but... Well, you can't see out my window, so does that really matter? But no, speaking of cloudy weather in Redmond, we actually have a special guest who is in Redmond. And Brady, welcome to the call. Tell us, is it cloudy out there today?
Actually, it is very, very cold today. It's not exactly cloudy for once, but it's freezing. So I think the temperature dropped something like 20 degrees in the last 24 hours. So we're all wearing long sleeves and no more flip-flops. So
great. Well, so welcome to the show. This is our second episode that Brian and I have done together. And the last one, we sort of did an overview of the Windows Azure platform, and we talked about the various computing options between the virtual machines, cloud services, and websites. And we brought you on today because you could probably tell us a little bit more about the websites than we talked about last week. So why don't you tell us a little about yourself, who you are, and what you do at Microsoft?
I can do that. I'm Brady Gaster. I work on the Windows Azure Evangelism team here at corporate in Redmond. And the area of Azure that I focus on is the Windows Azure websites stuff. Traditionally a web developer, API developer. I've been building web apps forever, consulting and whatnot. So it was kind of an obvious area of the framework for me to jump onto when I got here. So pretty much if you hear me talking about Windows Azure, I'll be talking about using Windows Azure websites.
Excellent. Cool. Now, Windows Azure Websites was pretty new in the spring release in June. Mm-hmm. I ran into you at TechEd. Well, I've known you for a long time, but I talked to you at TechEd, and I know you went out to TechEd Europe, right? And you've done a bunch of keynotes and other really cool presentations since then, and probably some cloud cover shows. So what kind of stuff have you been doing? What at the conferences have you been doing, and what kind of presentations have you been giving?
Pretty much what I've, you're right. We did run into each other in Orlando, because you can't drive very well. So he ran into me, sorry. but what I was doing in Orlando, I actually did, no talks in Orlando, but we, Corey Fowler and I, who host a Webcamps TV show, he and I actually drove a pair of, Windows Azure Websites workshops. So if you were at TechEd and you saw where all the HOL booths were, we were kind of off on the side doing workshops for three of those days. We did those same workshops when we were in TechEd Europe, but while I was in TechEd Europe, I actually did two presentations as well. One of those presentations was on SignalR. If you've seen my blog, then you know SignalR is kind of a favorite topic of mine. So I did a talk on SignalR with Windows Azure. And I also did Scott Hunter and Scott Hanselman's talk on the OneASP.NET futures for all intents and purposes. Most of the conferences that I've done have been community conferences. Last week I was over in Belgium and Sweden, did a pair of user groups, one in Belgium, one in Sweden, and I also attended a conference called Cloudburst that was put on by Magnus Martinsen. He's one of our MVPs for Windows Azure. I like working with the smaller conferences, nothing against the larger ones. They're a lot of fun and there's great topics there, but there's a lot of, how can I put this, in the user groups it tends to be a little more aggressive. The participants are a little freer to do what they want, so to speak, and you're kind of learning from the trenches. So in a lot of cases, those conferences are really exciting because it's people that aren't connected to Redmond who are learning by doing, and that tends to be a little bit more fun and a little bit more relaxed. So you know, your talk that you planned on going for an hour can go for three. It's kind of nice. But those conferences I've spoken at, the keynote that you mentioned I actually did for another MVP-run conference in Columbus, Ohio. That was called Cloud Develop. I'm hoping they do that one again next year. That was great. It was an all-cloud conference. It wasn't focused on Windows Azure, so we had guys there from VMware, Amazon, just talking about what it means to be a cloud-based developer now, and you know, not only from a development perspective, but financial and everything else. So it's a pretty exciting conference. They're doing a lot of those.
So Brian and I travel, and we speak a lot of user groups too, so I can definitely mirror what you say, that the smaller groups are more fun because you get into those one-on-one discussions and you hear what folks are really doing. Mm-hmm. So from that whole summary of trips that you've been on recently, what do you find that people are excited about with Azure these days?
What I'm finding that people are excited about with Azure right now is I'm definitely seeing a lot of excitement with the Windows Azure website stuff. And the reason that I think I'm seeing excitement with that is that we've kind of opened the doors to do other technologies. So you can do PHP, you can do Node.js. I think Python might be in its infancy stages at this point, but you can kind of do everything all in one basket. Whereas before, if you were doing Windows Azure development and you wanted to build your own website, you had to do something called a web role. And the programming model around that was slightly different than just kind of doing your traditional web application. And with Windows Azure websites, that barrier has kind of been lifted for a lot of people, and it's a lot easier to get your site out on Windows Azure websites, and deployment times a lot faster, and there are more options with the Node and PHP support, and then it's easier to get started using things like the application gallery. So if you wanted to set up your own blog like WordPress or Orchard, you could just pull it in and go crazy. So it's just a lot easier to get going if you're a web guy.
Okay. All right, so we a lot of topics there thrown out, so let's in the first episode, Peter and I were talking about the different things you could do in Azure, where we talked about websites just briefly, but really how we started with that platform as a service model, right, where you take your code, you put it up, and it gets managed for you on your own virtual machines. So at a basic level, how is Windows Azure websites different from that, taking code and just running it on a virtual machine?
From the perspective of a virtual machine, like if I'm looking at it from the perspective of a web developer, let's say I'm a startup. Startups don't necessarily have the freedom or the budget to be able to do things like pay infrastructure guys to be able to set up and maintain the VMs. So if you want to get your website launched in the cloud and your only option is to use a VM, there tends to be, in my opinion, a slightly steeper learning curve and also additional stuff that a web developer doesn't traditionally do. Most web developers just write code and push it. And that's kind of the idea behind Windows Azure websites. You can write your code and you can deploy it directly from Studio. You can use FTP, you can use web deploy from the command line, whatever you want. So it sort of removes the barrier to have to actually create and manage that machine, which kind of gives you more time to spend coding your app. Now, that's not to say that VMs aren't extremely valuable in cases where you've got larger applications, but the requirement has been lifted. You don't have to do that anymore. And you mentioned the PaaS approach. That was the deal with web roles. You kind of had to learn how a web role worked to be able to either change the code of your website to work with the web role moniker, or you had to start over again. And you don't have to do that with websites, especially if you're a PHP guy. You just push and go. You're ready to go.
So it sounds like developers can work with a deployment model they're more used to, just push and go on their code. But from an implementation standpoint, I'm trying to understand how this all works. We know with the PaaS model, with the web role, which are cloud service, whatever you want to call it, essentially you're getting a dedicated virtual machine. And what you do is you upload your code in a zip file, and we basically pull a vanilla stock VM off the shelf, boot it up, and then once it's booted and loaded up and everything, we take your zip file and unpack the code into it, and off you go. But that takes time. It could take, like, I don't know, 5 to 7 minutes for that to come live. How do websites get around that, and what's going on behind the scenes technically to make deployment so easy?
Cool. I can explain that to you pretty well. At a pretty high level, at the 30,000-foot level, what's happening is that the Windows Azure website's infrastructure itself actually runs in Windows Azure as a cloud service. Cloud service, web role, worker role. Everything in Windows Azure websites is basically built on top of the existing Windows Azure cloud service infrastructure. So the Windows Azure websites thing is actually its own little cloud, not little, it's its own big cloud service. So they basically have created sort of a process isolation model so that all the websites basically run all by themselves. Now, if you're asking about the size VMs or how you get the stuff on the machines, they've actually got it set up so that you can go with a number of different approaches. The free and the shared models both run in what's called a shared instance. So similar to traditional web hosting, you've got your web app running in a shared instance of Windows Azure Website Cloud Service. Other people are also running their websites in that shared instance as well. If you decide that you want to scale out and get your own reserved instance, or is that scale up? I guess that's scale up. If you want to scale up and go with your own reserved instance, you can basically flip a switch and all of your sites end up moving over to your reserved instance. That's sort of like a VM in the sense that it's your own machine with all your websites running on it, but you didn't have to go through the process of uploading the zip file, waiting however many minutes for the cloud service to spin up and everything. They've already got those instances reserved for Azure websites in the data center, so that deployment time is reduced by orders of magnitude. It's 30 seconds and you have a site out. So
now are people, one of the things that Peter and I mentioned in the first show is we quickly showed at the on the portal, you have all these metrics like, you know, your CPU bandwidth. We're going to get into some of that in the next episode. But from publishing, I imagine talking about publishing directly from GitHub is got to be huge, right? Are you seeing a lot of excitement around that?
I'm seeing an enormous amount of excitement around that. Actually, the week that announcement came out, the week that we announced that we would support pushes directly from GitHub and CodePlex for that matter, and the same week the announcement came out that we would support non-master branches. So if you have one of those situations where you're developing a site for a client and a second client wants kind of the same idea with some tweaks and you decide that you want to branch it rather than change everything, you can actually push your code from a branch. You couldn't do that before. You can only push from master. That was a huge, huge ask on the part of a lot of our customers because they did not want to have to create another Git repository that was created just for the purpose of their website. They wanted to use their existing Git repository, either in CodePlex or GitHub, to push to Windows Azure websites. So that's been really, really nice. I think that the status report that came out the week after that, we saw something like a 10% uptick in people going that way because they were waiting for that. Some of our competitors had that before, but now that we've got it, that's removed a barrier for a lot of people that are they want to keep using GitHub or they want to keep using CodePlex for their code, and they don't want to have a secondary Git repo that's just for their website. I can understand their perspective on it. So, but we have seen a lot of excitement. Over in Sweden last week, that was one of the biggest questions I was asked is, how do you do this? And luckily, we have a couple of videos demonstrating how to do it. So it's been good. I'm a big fan of it myself. So,
well, I definitely think the Git stuff and even publishing from TFS is pretty exciting and definitely something we'll probably want to cover more in depth on a future episode. You know, another thing, when we first walked into the portal earlier, before you were on, Brian's, you know, essentially the equivalent of file, new, whatever, and this option came up where there was a gallery with a whole list of applications in there. So how does that work? What's in there, and explain to us how that gets set up, because that was really neat.
I can totally do that. I can tell you what's in there, and what's in there are applications such as the gallery works in a similar capacity to the way the Web Matrix gallery works. If you download Web Matrix and you do file new website, one of the options that you have is select a template from the gallery. That would include things such as WordPress, Drupal, Orchard, Joomla, DNN, you name it. There's a lot of different apps out there. I can't even remember how many there were at last count. The gallery that you're referring to on the portal doesn't have as many entries in it, and the reason that it doesn't have as many entries in it is the Windows Azure Websites team actually goes through every submission to that gallery, and they make sure that it'll run okay. They make sure that if you were to grab, you know, CMS 42, that CMS 42 doesn't have some sort of weird process issue that would either break their process isolation model or, more importantly, break that application because it needs different isolation support. The important thing around that is, you know, that whenever you grab one of those apps from the gallery, that app has been fully vetted by the team that designed the architecture that Windows Azure Websites runs on. So you're sort of getting their blessing that it's a good one to use. Now, if you open up Web Matrix and you look at their gallery, you'll see a little Azure icon in the upper left corner of some of those apps. That sort of flags that the team has signed off that it's good for Azure. So there are a lot of applications that will still run in Azure that don't have that icon, but those are the apps that they haven't actually vetted fully yet. So that just sort of explains that. I don't know the process by which submissions get over to the team and the team reviews them and approves them. I've asked the team that, and they just kind of smile at me and say that's one of their secret sauce items. So I don't think I'm at the liberty of understanding what that review process involves. But I can tell you, I don't know what it involves. I do know that they test those apps thoroughly.
So maybe you don't know the answer to this question then, but a lot of those apps, especially the open source CMS apps like WordPress and Drupal and all those things, you were able to run those in cloud services previously, but you had to jump through a lot of hoops. It wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. What did they do to make that possible or easier in websites, or can we get into that now?
We can get into that. Again, that's one of those things that at a deep architectural level, I'm not exactly clear on what they do. I just don't know. I have asked, and it's one of those things where I'm actually involved in an escalation right now to see if I can talk to the manager of the team that I asked to get kind of special permission so that I'll know. And the reason that I want to know that is there are a lot of application developers. Brian and I know of one in Charlotte who has this idea of building their own CMS. And if they build their own CMS, a wonderful distribution channel for that CMS would be for it to land in the application gallery on the web, on the Windows Azure websites, app. So if they get it in there, everybody that uses Windows Azure websites has the option of selecting it. If you're a CMS developer, that's a great distribution channel. I just don't know what the process is after an application gets submitted before it gets approved. So I just learned about that probably in the last 2 weeks. Asked that question. So
that's really cool, though, the fact that there is a process for it, which is really cool because it is a great way to discover things. You go in there and you see all the different options. You want to play around with Orchard. Maybe you never used WordPress before or something like that. It's nice just to be able to have the option to play around with it. Okay, so we're just about out of time. One of the things that you mentioned that I still want to dive into, but maybe we'll save this for the next episode, you started talking about the process isolation a little bit, and that's always something that people ask me about and how that is different from traditional hosting, right? Because there's a lot of differences there. But I think for this one, we're just about out of time. But one last question I have for you is there anything new and exciting that you can tell us about that might be coming without breaking any secrets that you might be keeping? Or
one of the biggest questions that I've been asked a lot by people is, well, when I create a new MVC project, if I want to push it out to Windows Azure websites, it'll bark at me and it says, hey, I can't deploy a 4.5 application. So developers have to remember when they go into Visual Studio to select the .NET Framework 4.0. At the time of this recording, I'm pretty confident that I can tell you that pain point will not be one that you'll have to deal with for much longer. I communicate with the team pretty regularly, and they've kind of hinted around that pretty soon they're going to want to announce a 4.5 support. So I do think that is right around the corner if it's not already out by the time you're watching this. So.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Brady. That's all the time we have for this episode. But we do want to, in the next episode, we're going to dive into some of these things a little bit more in depth. I had a ton of questions I still wanted to get to. And so thanks very much for joining us this time. And we'll be talking to you in the next episode.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Look forward to it.
See you next time.
Take care.